tie. Fuck it, I said, taking the suit and a white button up to the register. Who said a groom had to wear a tie? Walking out of the shopping center, I saw a pair of black Converse in the window. I went in, asked for my size, tried them on, and smiled. I'll take them, I said to the woman helping me. She smiled with a look in her eyes that would have turned me on just 6 months ago. A woman looking at me that way usually meant any attempts I made to get in her pants had just been made 1,000 times easier. That look meant, take me home. Great choice, she said in a smooth, flirtatious voice. Her dark hair was long, thick, and shiny, probably half of her 5 feet. She was a sophisticated Asian beauty, wrapped in a tight dress and sky-high heels. Her eyes were sharp, calculating. She was exactly the kind of challenge my old self would have happily taken on. Are you staying in Vegas long? Just a few days. Is this your first time here? Second. Oh, I was going to offer to show you around. I'm getting married in these shoes in a couple of hours. My response snuffed out the desire in her eyes, and she smiled pleasantly, but she'd clearly lost interest. Congratulations. Thanks, I said, taking my receipt and bag with the shoebox inside. I left, feeling much better about myself than I would have had I been here on a guy's trip and leading her back to my hotel room. I didn't know about love back then. It was fan-fucking-tastic to go home to Abby every night and see the welcoming, loving look in her eyes. Nothing was better than coming up with new ways to make her fall in love with me all over again. I lived for that shit now, and it was way more satisfying. Within an hour of leaving the Bellagio, I had picked up a suit and a gold band for Abby, and was right back where I started, in her hotel room. I sat on the end of the bed and grabbed the remote, clicking on the power to the TV before bending over to untie my sneakers. A familiar scene lit up the screen. It was Keaton, quartered off with yellow tape and still smoking. The brick around the windows were charred, and the ground surrounding was saturated with water. The reporter was interviewing a tearful girl, describing how her roommate had never returned to the dorm, and she was still waiting to hear if she was among the dead. I couldn't hold it in anymore. I covered my face with my hands and rested my elbows on my knees. My body shook as I mourned my friends and all the people I didn't know who'd lost their lives, as I apologized over and over for being the reason why they were there, and being too much of a fucking bastard for choosing Abby over turning myself in. When I couldn't cry anymore, I retreated to the shower, standing under the steaming water until I got back into the frame of mind Abby needed me to be in. She didn't want to see me until just before the wedding, so I got my shit straight in my head, got dressed, slapped on some cologne, tied my new kicks, and headed out. Before letting the door close, I took one long, last look at the room. The next time I came through this door, I'd be Abby's husband. That was the only thing that made the guilt bearable. My heart began to pound. The rest of my life was just hours away. The elevator opened, and I followed the loudly patterned carpet through the casino. The suit made me feel like $1 million, and people were staring, wondering where the fine-looking asshole sporting Converse was off to. When I was about halfway through the casino, I noticed a woman sitting on the floor with shopping bags crying into her cell phone. I stopped dead in my tracks. It was Abby. Instinctively, I stepped to the side, partially hiding myself at the end of a row of slot machines. With the music, the beeping, and the chatter, I couldn't hear what she was saying, but my blood ran cold. Why was she crying? Who was she crying to? Didn't she want to marry me? Should I confront her? Should I just wait it out and hope to God she doesn't call it off? Abby picked herself off the floor, struggling with her bags. Everything in me wanted to run to her and help, but I was afraid. I was fucking terrified that if I approached her in that moment, she might tell me the truth, and I was afraid to hear it. The selfish bastard in me took over, and I let her walk away. Once she was out of sight, I sat on an empty slot machine stool and pulled the pack of cigarettes out of my inside pocket. Flicking the lighter, the end of my cigarette sizzled before it glowed red while I pulled in a long drag of smoke. What was I going to do if Abby changed her mind? Could we come back from something like that? Regardless of the answer, I was going to have to figure out a way. Even if she couldn't go through with the wedding, I couldn't lose her. I sat there for a long time, smoking, slipping dollar bills into the slot machine while a waitress brought me free drinks. After four, I waved her away. Getting drunk before the wedding wouldn't solve a damn thing. Maybe that's why Abby was having second thoughts. Loving her wasn't enough. I needed to grow the fuck up, get a real job, quit drinking, fighting, and control my goddamn anger. I sat alone in the casino, silently vowing that I would make all of those changes and they would start right then. My phone chimed. Just an hour was left before the wedding. I texted Abby, worried how she might respond. I miss you.
Abby. I smiled at the phone display. Seeing the text was from Travis. I clicked a response, knowing that words couldn't convey what I was feeling. I miss you too. T-minus 1 hour. You ready yet? Not yet. You? Hells yes. I look ducking amazing. When you see me, you will want to marry me for sure. Ducking? Fucking. Goddamn autocorrect. Pick? No, it's bad luck. You're lucky 13. You have good luck. You're marrying me, so clearly you don't. And don't call me that. Love you, baby. Love you too. See you soon. Nervous? Of course, aren't you? Only about your cold feet. Feet are toasty warm. I wish I could explain to you how happy I am right now. You don't have to. I can relate. Smiley face. Heart. I set the phone on the bathroom counter and looked into the mirror, touching the end of the lip gloss wand to my bottom lip. After pinning one last piece of my hair back, I went over to the bed where I'd laid the dress. It wasn't what my 10-year-old self would have chosen, but it was beautiful. And what we were about to do was beautiful. Even why I was doing it was beautiful. I could think of much less noble reasons to get married. And besides that, we loved each other. Was getting married this young so awful? People used to do this all the time. I shook my head, trying to shake off the dozens of conflicting emotions swirling around my mind. Why go back and forth? This was happening, and we were in love. Crazy? Yes. Wrong? No. I stepped into the dress, and then pulled up the zipper, standing in front of the mirror. Much better, I said. In the store, as lovely as the dress was, without hair and makeup done, the dress didn't look right. With my red lips and painted lashes, the look was complete. I pinned the diamond butterfly into the base of the messy curls that made up my side bun, and slipped my feet into the new strappy pumps, purse, phone, Trav's ring. The chapel would have everything else. The taxi was waiting. Even though thousands of women were married in Las Vegas every year, it didn't keep everyone from staring at me as I walked across the casino floor in my wedding dress. Some smiled, some just watched, but it all made me uncomfortable. When my father lost his last professional match after four in a row, and he announced publicly that it was my fault, I'd received enough attention to last two lifetimes. Because of a few words spoken in frustration, he'd created Lucky 13, and given me an unbelievable burden to bear. Even when my mother finally decided to leave Mick, and we moved to Wichita 3 years later, starting over seemed impossible. I enjoyed two whole weeks of being an unknown before the first local reporter figured out who I was and approached me on the front lawn of my high school. All it took was one hateful girl a single hour of Friday night Googling to figure out why anyone in the press cared enough to try to get a "Where is she now?" headline. The second half of my high school experience was ruined, even with a mouthy, scrappy best friend. When America and I left for college, I wanted to be invisible. Until the day I'd met Travis, I was enjoying my newfound anonymity immensely. I looked down from the 100th pair of eyes watching me intently, and I wondered if being with Travis would always make me feel conspicuous.
Chapter 6. Dead or Alive. Travis. The limo door slammed hard behind me. Oh, shit. Sorry, I'm nervous. The driver waved me away.
No problem. $22, please. I'll come back with the limo.
The limo was new. White. Abby would like it. I handed him 30. So you'll be right back here in an hour and a half, right?
Yes, sir. Never late.
He drove away, and I turned around. The chapel was lit up, glowing against the early morning sky. It was maybe a half hour before sunrise. I smiled. Abby was going to love it. The front door opened and a couple came out. They were middle-aged, but he was in a tux and she was in a huge wedding dress. A short woman in a light pink suit dress was waving them goodbye, and then she noticed me.
Travis?
Yes, I said, buttoning my jacket.
I could just eat you up. I hope your bride appreciates what a looker you are.
She's prettier than me. The woman cackled.
I'm Chantilly. Pretty much run things around here.
She put her fists at her side, somewhere in the area of her hips. She was as wide as she was tall, and her eyes were nearly hidden under thick, fake lashes.
Come on in, sugar. Come in, come in,
she said, rushing me inside. The receptionist at the desk offered a smile and a small stack of paperwork. Yes, we want a DVD. Yes, we want flowers. Yes, we want Elvis. I checked all of the appropriate boxes, filled in our names and information, and then handed the paper back. Thank you, Mr. Maddox, the receptionist said. My hands were sweating. I couldn't believe I was here. Chantilly patted my arm, well, more like my wrist, because that's the highest she could reach.
This way, honey. You can freshen up and wait for your bride in here. What was her name?
Abby, I said, walking through the door Chantilly had opened. I looked around, noting the couch and mirror surrounded by 1,000 huge light bulbs. The wallpaper was busy, but nice, and everything seemed clean and classy, just like Abby wanted.
I'll let you know when she arrives, Chantilly said with a wink. You need anything? A water?
Yes, that would be great, I said, sitting down.
Be right back.
She lilted as she backed out of the room and closed the door behind her. I could hear her humming down the hall. I leaned back against the couch, trying to process what had just happened, and wondering if Chantilly had just chugged a 5-hour energy, or if she was just naturally that chipper. Even though I was just sitting, my heart was pounding against my chest. This is why people had witnesses, to help them keep calm before the wedding. For the first time since we'd landed, I wished Shepley and my brothers were there with me. They would have been giving me all kinds of shit, helping to keep my mind off the fact that my stomach was begging to throw up. The door opened.
Here you are. Anything else? You look a little nervous. Have you eaten?
Nope, I haven't had time.
Oh, we can't have you passing out at the altar. I'll bring you some cheese and crackers and maybe a little fruit plate.
Sure, thanks, I said, still a little bewildered by Chantilly's enthusiasm. She backed out, shut the door, and I was alone again. My head fell back against the couch. My eyes picked out different shapes in the wall texture. I was grateful for anything that kept me from glancing down at my watch. Was she coming? I closed my eyes tight, refusing to go there. She loved me. I trusted her. She would be here. God damn it, I wished my brothers were here. I was going to go out of my ever-loving mind.
Abby. Oh, don't you look pretty, the driver said as I slid into the back seat of the taxi. Thank you, I said, feeling relieved to be out of the casino. Graceland Chapel, please. Did you want to start out the day married or what? The driver said, smiling back at me from the rearview mirror. She had short gray hair, and her backside filled up all of the seat, and then some. It was just the quickest we could get it done. You're awfully young to be in such a hurry. I know, I said, watching Las Vegas pass by outside my window. She clicked her tongue. You look pretty nervous. If you're having second thoughts, just let me know. I don't mind turning around. It's okay, honey. I'm not nervous about getting married. No? No, we love each other. I'm not nervous about that. I just want him to be okay. You think he's having second thoughts? No, I said, laughing once. I met her eyes in the mirror. Are you married? Once or twice, she said, winking at me. I got married in the same chapel that you are the first time around. But so did Bon Jovi. Oh, yeah? You know Bon Jovi? Tommy used to work on the docks, she sang, very much to my surprise. Yep, heard of him, I said, amused and grateful for the distraction. I just love him. Here, I have the CD. She popped it in, and for the rest of the drive we listened to John's greatest hits. Wanted Dead or Alive, Always, Bed of Roses. I'll Be There for You was just finishing up as we pulled over to the curb in front of the chapel. I pulled out a 50. Keep the rest. Bon Jovi helped. She gave me back the change. No tip, honey. You let me sing. I shut the door and waved to her as she left. Was Travis already here? I walked up to the chapel and opened the door. An older woman with big hair and too much lip gloss greeted me. Abby? Yes, I said, fidgeting with my dress. You're stunning. My name is Chantilly, and I'll be one of your witnesses. Let me take your things. I'll put them away and they'll be safe until you're finished. Thank you, I said, watching her take away my purse. Something swished when she walked, though I couldn't pinpoint what exactly. Oh, wait! I said, watching as she walked toward me holding out my purse. Travis's ring is in there. I'm sorry. Her eyes were barely slits when she smiled, making her fake lashes even more noticeable. It's fine, honey. Just breathe. I don't remember how, I said, sliding his ring over my thumb. Here, she said, holding out her hand. Give me your ring and his. I'll give them to each of you when it's time. Elvis will be by shortly to take you down the aisle. I looked at her, blank-faced. Elvis. As in, the king? Yes, I know who Elvis is, but... My words trailed away as I pulled off my ring with a small tug and placed it in her palm next to Travis's ring. Chantilly smiled. You can use this room to freshen up. Travis is waiting, so Elvis will be knocking any minute. See you at the end of the aisle. She watched me as she shut the door. I turned, startled by my own reflection in the huge mirror behind me. It was bordered by large round lights, like one an actress might use before a Broadway show. I sat down at the vanity, staring at myself in the mirror. Is that what I was? An actress? He was waiting. Travis is at the end of the aisle, waiting for me to join him so we can promise the rest of our lives to each other. What if my plan doesn't work? What if he goes to prison and this was all for nothing? What if they didn't so much as sniff in Travis's direction, and this was all pointless? I no longer had the excuse that I had gotten married before I was even legal to drink, because I was saving him. Did I need an excuse if I loved him? Why did anyone get married? For love? We had that in spades. I was so sure of everything in the beginning. I used to be sure about a lot of things. I didn't feel sure now. About anything. I thought about the look on Travis's face if he found out the truth, and then I thought about what bailing would do to him. I never wanted him to hurt, and I needed him as if he were a part of me. Of those two things, I was sure. Two knocks on the door nearly sent me into a panic attack. I turned, gripping the top of the chair back. It was white wire. Swirls and curves formed a heart in the middle.
Miss? Elvis said in a deep southern voice. It's time.
Oh, I said quietly. I don't know why. He couldn't hear me.
Abby, your hunka-hunka burning love is ready for you.
I rolled my eyes. I just need a minute.
The other side of the door was quiet.
Everything okay?
Yes, I said. Just 1 minute, please. After a few more minutes, there was another knock on the door.
Abby?
It was Chantilly. Can I come in, honey?
No, I'm sorry, but no. I'll be okay. I just need a little more time, and I'll be ready.
After another 5 minutes, three knocks on the door caused beads of sweat to form along my hairline. These knocks were familiar, stronger, more confident.
Pidge?
Chapter 7. Cash. Travis. The door blew open. She's here. I just showed her to a dressing room to freshen up. Are you ready?
Yeah, I said, jumping to my feet. I wiped my sweaty palms on my slacks and followed Chantilly out to the hallway and into the lobby. I stopped.
This way, honey, Chantilly said, encouraging me toward the double doors that led into the chapel.
Where is she?
I asked. Chantilly pointed.
In there. As soon as she's ready, we'll get started, but you have to be at the other end of the aisle, sugar.
Her smile was sweet and patient. I imagined she'd dealt with all kinds of situations, from drunks to jitters. After one last look at the door to Abby's room, I followed Chantilly down the aisle and she gave me the rundown on where to stand. While she was talking, a man with thick chops and an Elvis costume pushed open the door in grandiose fashion, curling his lips and humming Blue Hawaii.
Man, I really like Vegas. You like Vegas?
He said, his Elvis impression spot on. I grinned. Today I do.
Can't ask for better than that. Has Miss Chantilly told you everything you need to know to be a mister this morning?
Yeah, I think. He slapped my back.
No worries, fella, you're gonna do just fine. I'll go get your missus. Be back in a flash.
Chantilly giggled.
Oh, that Elvis.
After a couple of minutes, Chantilly checked her watch and then walked back down the aisle toward the double doors.
This happens all the time, the officiant assured me.
After another 5 minutes, Chantilly popped her head through the doors.
Travis, I think she's a little nervous. Do you want to try to talk to her?
Fuck. Yeah, I said. The aisle seemed short before, but now it felt like a mile. I pushed through the doors and raised my fist. I paused, took a breath, and then knocked a few times.
Pidge?
After what felt like two eternities, Abby finally spoke, her voice on the other side of the door.
I'm here.
Even though she was only inches away, she sounded miles away, just like the morning after I brought those two girls home from the bar. Just the thought of that night made me feel a burning sickness in my gut. I didn't even feel like the same person I was then.
You okay, baby?
I asked.
Yes, I was rushed. I need a moment to breathe.
She sounded anything but okay. I was determined to keep my head, to fight away the panic that used to cause me to do all kinds of stupid stuff. I needed to be the man Abby deserved.
You sure that's all?
She didn't reply. Chantilly cleared her throat and wrung her hands, clearly trying to think of something encouraging to say. I needed to be on the other side of that door.
Pidge,
I said, followed by a pause. What I would say next could change everything, but making everything all right for Abby trumped my own epically selfish needs.
I know you know I love you. What you may not know is that there is nothing I want more than to be your husband. But if you're not ready, I'll wait for you, Pigeon. I'm not going anywhere. I mean, yeah, I want this, but only if you do. I need you to know that you can open this door and we can walk down the aisle, or we can get a taxi and go home. Either way, I love you.
After another long pause, I knew it was time. I pulled an old, worn envelope from my inside jacket pocket and held it with both hands. The faded pen looped around, and I followed the lines with my index finger. My mother had written the words, "To the future Mrs. Travis Maddox." My dad had given it to me when he thought things between Abby and me were getting serious. I'd only pulled this letter out once since then, wondering what she'd written inside, but never betraying the seal. Those words weren't meant for me. My hands were shaking. I had no clue what Mom had written, but I really needed her right now, and was hoping that this one time she could somehow reach out from where she was and help me. I squatted down, sliding the envelope under the door.
Abby. Pidge. The word used to make my eyes roll. I didn't know why he started calling me that in the first place, and I didn't care. Now, Travis's weird little nickname for me, spoken in his deep, gritty voice, made my entire body relax. I stood and walked over to the door, holding my palm to the wood. I'm here. I could hear my breath, wheezing, slow, like I was sleeping. Every part of me was relaxed. His warm words fell slowly around me like a cozy blanket. It didn't matter what happened after we got home, as long as I was Travis's wife. It was then that I understood that whether I was doing this to help him or not, I was there to get married to the man who loved me more than any man loved any woman. And I loved him. Enough for three lifetimes. In the Graceland Chapel, in this dress, was almost exactly where I wanted to be. The only place better would be next to him at the end of the aisle. Just then, a small white square appeared at my feet. "What's this?" I said, bending down to pick it up. The paper was old, yellow. It was addressed to the future Mrs. Travis Maddox. "It's from my mom," Travis said. My breath caught. I almost didn't want to open it. It had obviously been sealed and kept safe for so long. "Open it," Travis said, seeming to read my thoughts. My finger carefully slid in between the opening, hoping to preserve it as best I could, but failing miserably. I pulled out the tri-folded paper, and the entire world stopped. "We don't know each other, but I know that you must be very special. I can't be there today to watch my baby boy promise his love to you, but there are a few things that I think I might say to you if I were. First, thank you for loving my son. Of all my boys, Travis is the most tender-hearted. He is also the strongest. He will love you with everything he has for as long as you let him. Tragedies in life sometimes change us, but some things never change. A boy without a mother is a very curious creature. If Travis is anything like his father, and I know that he is, he's a deep ocean of fragility, protected by a thick wall of swear words and feigned indifference. A Maddox boy will take you all the way to the edge, but if you go with him, he'll follow you anywhere. I wish more than anything that I could be there today. I wish I could see his face when he takes this step with you, and that I could stand there with my husband and experience this day with all of you. I think that's one of the things I'll miss the most. But today isn't about me. You reading this letter means that my son loves you. And when a Maddox boy falls in love, he loves forever. Please, give my baby boy a kiss for me. My wish for both of you is that the biggest fight you have is over who is the most forgiving. Love, Diane." "Pigeon?" I held the letter to my chest with one hand and opened the door with the other. Travis's face was tight with worry, but the second his eyes met mine, the worry fell away. He seemed stunned by the sight of me. I don't think there's a word for how beautiful you are." His sweet chestnut eyes, shadowed by his thick eyelashes, soothed my nerves. His tattoos were hidden under his gray suit and crisp white button-up. My God, he was perfection. He was sexy. He was brave. He was tender. And Travis Maddox was mine. All I had to do was walk down the aisle. "I'm ready." "What did she say?" he asked. My throat tightened, so a sob wouldn't escape. I kissed him on the cheek.
That's from her.
Yeah? He said, a sweet smile sweeping his face. And she pretty much nailed everything wonderful about you, even though she didn't get to watch you grow up. She's so wonderful, Travis. I wish I could have known her.
I wish she could have known you.
He paused a moment and thought, and then held up his hands. His sleeve inched back, revealing his pigeon tattoo.
Let's sleep on it. You don't have to decide right now. We'll go back to the hotel, think about it, and...
He sighed, letting his arms and shoulders fall.
I know. This is crazy. I just wanted it so bad, Abby. This crazy is my sanity. We can...
I couldn't stand watching him stumble and struggle any longer.
Baby, stop,
I said, touching his mouth with three of my fingertips.
Just stop.
He watched me, waiting.
Just so we're straight, I'm not leaving here until you're my husband.
At first, his brows pulled in, dubious, and then he offered a cautious smile.
You're sure?
Where's my bouquet?
Oh, Chantilly said, distracted by the discussion.
Here, honey. She handed me a perfectly round ball of red roses. Elvis offered his arm, and I took it.
See you at the altar, Travis, he said.
Travis took my hand, kissed my fingers, and then jogged back the way he'd come, followed by a giggly Chantilly. That small touch wasn't enough. Suddenly, I couldn't wait to get to him, and my feet quickly made their way to the chapel. The wedding march wasn't playing. Instead, Thing for You, the song we danced to at my birthday party, came through the speakers. I stopped and looked at Travis, finally getting a chance to take in his gray suit and black Converse sneakers. He smiled when he saw the recognition in my eyes. I took another step, and then another. The officiant gestured for me to slow down, but I couldn't. My entire body needed to be next to Travis more than it ever had been before. He must have felt the same way. Elvis hadn't made it halfway before Travis decided to stop waiting and walked toward us. I took his arm.
I was gonna give her away.
Travis's mouth pulled to one side.
She was already mine.
I hugged his arm, and we walked the rest of the way together. The music quieted, and the officiant nodded to both of us.
Travis? Abby?
Chantilly took my rose bouquet and then stood to the side. Our trembling hands were knotted together. We were both so nervous and happy that it was almost impossible to stand still. Even knowing how much I truly wanted to marry Travis, my hands were trembling. I'm not sure what the officiant said exactly. I can't remember his face or what he wore. I can only recall his deep nasally voice, his northeastern accent, and Travis's hands holding mine.
Look at me, Pidge,
Travis said quietly. I glanced up at my future husband, getting lost in the sincerity and adoration in his eyes. No one, not even America, had ever looked at me with that much love. The corners of Travis's mouth turned up, so I must have had the same expression. As the officiant spoke, Travis's eyes poured over me, my face, my hair, my dress. He even looked down at my shoes. Then he leaned over until his lips were just a few inches from my neck, and inhaled. The officiant paused.
I want to remember everything, Travis said.
The officiant smiled, nodded, and continued. A flash went off, startling us. Travis glanced behind him, acknowledged the photographer, and then looked at me. We mirrored each other's cheesy grins. I didn't care that we must have looked absolutely ridiculous. It was like we were getting ready to jump off the highest high dive into the deepest river that fed into the most magnificent, terrifying waterfall, right onto the best and most fantastic roller coaster in the universe. 10 times.
True marriage begins well before the wedding day,
the officiant began.
And the efforts of marriage continue well beyond the ceremony's end. A brief moment in time, and the stroke of the pen are all that is needed to create the legal bond of marriage.
but it takes a lifetime of love, commitment, forgiveness, and compromise to make marriage durable and everlasting. I think Travis and Abby, you've just shown us what your love is capable of in a tense moment. Your yesterdays were the path that led you to this chapel, and your journey to a future of togetherness becomes a little clearer with each new day. Travis leaned his cheek to my temple. I was grateful he wanted to touch me, where and whenever he could. If I could have hugged him to me and not disrupted the ceremony, I would have. The officiant's words began to blur together. A few times, Travis spoke, and I did too. I slipped Travis's black ring onto his finger, and he beamed. "With this ring, I thee wed," I said, repeating after the officiant. "Nice choice," Travis said, admiring his ring. When it was Travis's turn, he seemed to have trouble, and then slid two rings onto my finger, my engagement ring and a simple gold band. I wanted to take a moment to appreciate that he'd gotten me an official wedding band, maybe even say so, but I was having an out-of-body experience. The harder I tried to be present, the faster everything seemed to happen. I thought maybe I should actually listen to the list of things I was promising, but the only voice that made sense was Travis's. "I damn sure do," he said with a smile. "And I promise to never enter another fight, drink in excess, gamble, or throw a punch in anger, and I'll never, ever make you cry sad tears again." When it was my turn again, I paused. "I just want you to know, before I make my promises, that I'm super stubborn. You already know I'm hard to live with. And you've made it clear on dozens of occasions that I drive you crazy. And I'm sure I've driven anyone who's watched these last few months crazy with my indecision and uncertainty. But I want you to know that whatever love is, this has got to be it. We were best friends first, and we tried not to fall in love, and we did anyway. If you're not with me, it's not where I want to be. I'm in this. I'm with you. We might be impulsive and absolutely insane to be standing here at our age, 6 months after we met. This whole thing might play out to be a completely wonderful, beautiful disaster. But I want that if it's with you." "Like Johnny and June," Travis said, his eyes a bit glossed over. "It's all uphill from here, and I'm going to love every minute of it."
"Do you?" the officiant began.
"I do," I said.
"Okay," he said with a chuckle. "But I have to say it."
"I've heard it once. I don't need to hear it again," I said, smiling, never taking my eyes from Travis. He squeezed my hands. We repeated more promises, and then the officiant paused.
"That's it?" Travis asked.
The officiant smiled.
"That's it. You're married."
"Really?" he asked. His eyebrows raised. He looked like a kid on Christmas morning.
"You may now kiss your..."
Travis took me in both arms and wrapped me tightly, kissing me, excitedly and passionate at first, and then his lips slowed, moving against mine more tenderly. Chantilly clapped with her petite, chubby hands.
"That was a good one. The best one I've seen all week. I love it when they don't go as planned."
The officiant said, "I present to you Ms. Chantilly and Mr. King, Mr. and Mrs. Travis Maddox."
Elvis clapped too, and Travis lifted me in his arms. I took each side of his face into my hands and leaned over to kiss him.
"I'm just trying not to have a Tom Cruise moment," Travis said, beaming at everyone in the room. "I now understand the whole jumping on the couch and punching the floor thing. I don't know how to express how I feel. Where's Oprah?"
I let out an uncharacteristic cackle. He was grinning ear to ear, and I'm sure I looked just as annoyingly happy. Travis set me down and then glanced around at everyone in the room. He seemed a little shocked.
"Whoa!"
he yelled, his fists shaking in front of him. He was having a very Tom Cruise moment. He laughed, and then he kissed me again.
"We did it!"
I laughed with him. He took me into his arms, and I noticed that his eyes were a little glossy.
"She married me," he said to Elvis.
I fucking love you, baby, he yelled again, hugging and kissing me. I wasn't sure what I expected, but this definitely wasn't it. Chantilly, the officiant, and even Elvis were laughing, half in amusement, half in awe. The photographer's flash was going off like we were surrounded by paparazzi.
Just a few papers to sign, a few pictures, and then you can start your happily ever after, Chantilly said.
She turned and then faced us again with a wide, toothy grin, holding up a piece of paper and a pen.
Oh, Chantilly said, your bouquet. We're going to need that in the pictures.
She handed me the flowers, and Travis and I posed. We stood together. We showed off our rings, side by side, face to face, jumping in the air, hugging, kissing. At one point, Travis held me up in his arms. After a quick signing of the marriage certificate, Travis led me by the hand to the limo waiting for us outside.
Did that really just happen? I asked.
It sure as hell did.
Did I see some misty eyes back there?
Pigeon, you are now Mrs. Travis Maddox. I've never been this happy in my life.
A smile burst across my face, and I laughed and shook my head. I'd never seen a crazy person be so endearing. I lunged at him, pressing his lips against mine. Since his tongue had been in my mouth in the chapel, all I could think about was getting it back there.
Travis knotted his fingers in my hair as I climbed on top of him, and I dug my knees into the leather seat on each side of his hips. My fingers fumbled with his belt while he leaned over to press the button to lift the privacy window. I cussed his shirt buttons for taking so long to undo, and then began working impatiently on a zipper. Travis's mouth was everywhere, kissing the tender parts of skin just behind my ear, running his tongue down the line of my neck, and nibbling my collarbone. With one motion, he turned me onto my back, immediately sliding his hand up my thigh and hooking my panties with his finger. Within moments, they were hanging off one of my ankles, and Travis's hand was moving up the inside of my leg until he paused at the tender skin between my thighs.
Baby, I whispered, before he silenced me with his mouth.
He was breathing hard through his nose, holding me against him like it was the first and the last time. Travis pulled back onto his knees, his ripped abs and chest and his tattoos on full display. My thighs instinctively tensed, but he took my right leg in both of his hands, gently moving them apart. I watched as his mouth hungrily worked from my toes to my heel, my calf, my knee, and then to my inner thigh. I lifted my hips to his mouth, but he lingered on my upper legs for several moments, far more patient than I was. Once his tongue touched the most sensitive parts of me, his fingers slid between my dress and the seat, gripping my ass, lightly tugging me toward him. Every nerve melted and tensed at the same time. Travis had been in that position before, but he had clearly been holding back, saving his best work for our wedding night. My knees bent, shook, and I grabbed at his ears. He paused once, only to whisper my name against my wet skin, and I faltered, closing my eyes and feeling as if they were rolling to the back of my head in pure ecstasy. I moaned, making his kisses more eager, and then he tensed, lifting my body closer to his mouth. Every passing second became more intense, a brick wall between wanting to let go and needing to stay in that moment. Finally, when I couldn't wait any longer, I reached up and buried Travis's face into me. I cried out, feeling him smiling, overcome by the intense jolts of electricity bolting throughout my body. With all of Travis's distractions, I didn't realize we were at the Bellagio until I heard the driver's voice over the speaker.
I'm sorry, Mr. and Mrs. Maddox, but we've arrived at your hotel. Would you like me to take another drive down the strip?
Chapter 8. Finally. Travis.
No, just give us a minute, I said. Abby was half lying, half sitting on the black leather seat of the limo, her cheeks flushed, breathing hard. I kissed her ankle and then pulled her panties off the toe of her high heel, handing them to her. God damn, she was a beautiful sight. I couldn't take my eyes off her while I buttoned up my shirt.
Abby flashed me a huge grin while she shimmied her panties back over her hips. The limo driver knocked on the door. Abby nodded and I gave him the green light to open it. I handed him a large bill and then lifted my wife into my arms. We made it through the lobby and then the casino in just a few minutes. You might say I was a little motivated to get back to the room. Luckily, having Abby in my arms provided cover for my bulging dick. She ignored the dozens of people staring at us while we entered the elevator, and then planted her mouth on mine. The floor number was muffled when I tried to say it to the amused couple closest to the buttons, but I saw out of the corner of my eye that they'd pushed the right one. As soon as we stepped into the hall, my heart began to pound. When we reached the door, I struggled with keeping Abby in my arms and getting the keycard out of my pocket. "I'll get it, baby," she said, pulling it out and then kissing me while she unlocked the door. "Thank you, Mrs. Maddox." Abby smiled against my mouth. "My pleasure." I carried her into the room and lowered her down to stand at the foot of the bed. Abby watched me for a moment while she kicked off her heels. "Let's get this out of the way, Mrs. Maddox. This is one article of clothing of yours that I don't want to ruin." I turned her around and then slowly unzipped her dress, kissing each piece of skin as it was exposed. Every inch of Abby was already ingrained in my mind, but touching and tasting the skin of the woman that was now my wife made it new all over again. I felt an excitement I'd never felt before. The dress fell to the floor, and I picked it up, tossing it over the back of a chair. Abby unsnapped the back of her bra, letting it fall to the floor, and I tucked my thumbs between her skin and the lacy fabric of her panties. I grinned. I'd already had them off once. I leaned down to kiss the skin behind her ear. "I love you so much," I whispered, slowly pushing her panties down her thighs. They fell to her ankles, and she kicked them away with her bare feet. I wrapped my arms around her, taking a deep breath in through my nose, pulling her bare back against my chest. I needed to be inside her. My dick was practically reaching out for her. But it was important to take our time. We only got one shot at a wedding night, and I wanted it to be perfect.
Abby. Goosebumps formed all over my body. 4 months earlier, Travis had taken something from me I'd never given to any other man. I was so hell-bent on giving it to him, I didn't have time to be nervous. Now, on our wedding night, knowing what to expect and knowing how much he loved me, I was more nervous than I had been that first night. "Let's get this out of the way, Mrs. Maddox. This is one article of clothing of yours that I don't want to ruin," he said. I breathed out a small laugh, remembering my buttoned-up pink cardigan and the pattern of blood spatters down the middle of it. Then I thought about seeing Travis in the cafeteria the first time. "I ruin a lot of sweaters," he'd said, with his killer smile and dimples. The same smile I wanted to hate. The same lips that were making their way down my back right now. Travis moved me forward, and I crawled onto the bed, looking behind me, waiting, hoping he would climb on. He was watching me, pulling off his shirt, kicking off his shoes, and dropping his slacks to the floor. He shook his head, turned me onto my back, and then settled on top of me. "No?" I asked. "I'd rather look into my wife's eyes than be creative. At least for tonight." He brushed a loose hair from my face, and then kissed my nose. It was a little amusing watching Travis take his time, pondering how and what he wanted to do to me. Once we were naked and settled under the sheets, he took a deep breath. "Mrs. Maddox?" I smiled. "Yes?" "Nothing. I just wanted to call you that." "Good. I kind of like it." Travis's eyes scanned my face. "Do you?" "Is that a real question? Because it's kind of hard to show it more than taking vows to be with you forever." Travis paused, confliction darkening his expression. "I saw you," he said, his voice barely a whisper. "In the casino." My memory instantly went into rewind. Already sure he had crossed paths with Jesse, and he'd possibly seen a woman with him who resembled me. Jealous eyes play tricks on people.
just when I was ready to argue that I hadn't seen my ex, Travis began again. On the floor. I saw you, Pidge. My stomach sank. He'd seen me crying. How would I possibly explain that away? I couldn't. The only way was to create a diversion. I pushed my head back into the pillow, looking straight into his eyes. Why do you call me Pigeon? I mean, really. My question seemed to take him off guard. I waited, hoping he would forget all about the previous topic. I didn't want to lie to his face, or admit what I'd done. Not tonight. Not ever. His choice to allow me to change the subject was clear in his eyes. He knew what I was doing, and he was going to let me do it. You know what a pigeon is? I shook my head in a tiny movement. It's a dove. They're really fucking smart. They're loyal, and they mate for life. That first time I saw you, in the circle, I knew what you were. Under the buttoned-up cardigan and the blood, you weren't going to fall for my shit. You were going to make me earn it. You would require a reason to trust me. I saw it in your eyes, and I couldn't shake it until I saw you that day in the cafeteria. Even though I tried to ignore it, I knew it even then. Every fuck-up, every bad choice, were breadcrumbs, so that we found our way to each other, so that we found our way to this moment. My breath faltered. I am so in love with you. His body was lying between my open legs, and I could feel him against my thighs, only a couple of inches from where I wanted him to be. You're my wife. When he said the words, a peace filled his eyes. It reminded me of the night he won the bet for me to stay at his apartment. Yes, you're stuck with me now. He kissed my chin. Finally. He took his time, as he gently slid inside of me, closing his eyes for only a second before gazing into mine again. He rocked against me slowly, rhythmically, kissing my mouth intermittently. Even though Travis had always been careful and gentle with me, the first few moments were a little uncomfortable. He must have known that I was new to this, even though I'd never mentioned it. The whole campus knew about Travis's conquests, but my experiences with him were never the wild romps everyone talked about. Travis was always soft and tender with me, patient. Tonight was no exception, maybe even more so. Once I relaxed and moved back against him, Travis reached down. He hooked his hand behind my knee and pulled up gently, stopping at his hip. He slid into me again, this time deeper. I sighed and lifted my hip to him. There were much worse things in life than promising to feel Travis Maddox's naked body against and inside of mine for the rest of my life. Much, much worse. He kissed me, and tasted me, and hummed against my mouth, rocking against me, craving me, pulling at my skin as he lifted my other leg and pushed my knees against my chest so he could press himself into me even deeper. I moaned and shifted, unable to keep quiet while he positioned himself, so he was entering me at different angles, working his hips until my nails were digging into the skin of his back. My fingertips were buried deep into his sweaty skin, but I could still feel his muscles bulging and sliding beneath them. Travis's thighs were rubbing and bumping against my backside. He held himself up on one elbow, and then sat up, pulling my legs with him until my ankles were resting on his shoulders. He made love to me harder then, and even though it was a little painful, that pain shot sparks of adrenaline all over my body. It took every bit of pleasure I was already feeling to a new level.
Oh God, Travis, I said, breathing his name.
I needed to say something, anything to let go of the intensity building up inside me. My words made his body tense, and the rhythm of his movements became faster, more rigid, until beads of sweat formed on our skin, making it easier to slide against each other. He let my legs fall back to the bed as he positioned himself directly over me again. He shook his head.
You feel so good, he moaned. I want to make this last all night, but
I touched my lips to his ear.
I want you to come,
I said, ending the simple sentence with a soft, small kiss. I relaxed my hips,
letting my knees fall even farther apart and closer to the bed. Travis pressed deep inside me, over and over, his movements building as he groaned. I gripped my knee, pulling it toward my chest. The pain felt so good it was addictive, and I felt it build until my whole body tensed in short but strong bursts. I moaned loudly, not caring who might hear. Travis groaned in reaction. Finally, his movements slowed, but they were stronger, until he finally called out, "Oh, fuck! Damn! Ah!" he yelled. His body twitched and trembled as he pressed his forehead hard against my cheek. Both out of breath, we didn't speak. Travis kept his cheek against mine, twitching one more time before burying his face in the pillow under my head. I kissed his neck, tasting the salt on his skin. "You were right," I said. Travis pulled back to look at me, curious. "You were my last first kiss." He smiled, pressed his lips against me hard, and then buried his face against my neck. He was breathing heavily, but still managed to sweetly whisper, "I fucking love you, pigeon." Chapter 9. Before. Abby. A buzzing pulled me out of a deep sleep. The curtains kept out all but the slivers of sun bordering them. The blanket and sheets were hanging halfway off our king-size bed. My dress had fallen off the chair onto the floor, joining Travis's suit that was scattered all over the room, and I could only see one of my high heels. My naked body was tangled with Travis's. After the third time we consummated our marriage, we passed out from sheer exhaustion. Again with the buzzing. It was my phone on the nightstand. I reached over Travis and flipped it over, seeing Trent's name. Adam arrested. John Savage on the list of dead. That was all he said. I felt sick as I deleted the messages, worried that maybe Trent didn't offer more because the police were at Jim's now, maybe even telling their dad that Travis might be involved. I glanced at the time on my phone. It was 10 o'clock. John Savage was one less person to investigate. One more death for Travis to feel guilty about. I tried to remember if I'd seen John after the fire broke out. He was knocked out. Maybe he'd never gotten up. I thought of those frightened girls Trent and I saw in the hall of the basement. I thought about Hillary Short, who I knew from calc class, and was smiling as she stood next to her new boyfriend near the opposite wall of Keaton Hall 5 minutes before the fire. How long the list of the dead really was, and who was on it, was something I tried not to think about. Maybe we should all be punished. The truth was, we were all responsible, because we were all irresponsible. There is a reason why fire marshals clear these kinds of events, and safety precautions are taken. We ignored all of that. Turning on a radio or the television without seeing the images on the news was impossible. So Travis and I avoided them when possible. But all this media attention meant investigators would be all the more motivated to find someone to blame. I wondered if their hunt would stop with Adam, or if they were out for blood. If I were a parent of one of those dead students, I might be. I didn't want to see Travis go to jail for everyone's irresponsible behavior. And right or wrong, that wouldn't bring anyone back. I had done everything I could think of to keep him out of trouble, and I would deny his presence in Keaton Hall that night to my dying breath. People had done worse for those they loved. "Travis," I said, nudging him. He was face down with his head buried under a pillow. "Ugh," he groaned. "You want me to make breakfast? You want eggs?"
"It's just after 10.
"Still qualifies as brunch." When I didn't respond, he offered again. "Okay, an egg sandwich?" I paused, and then looked over at him with a smile.
"Baby?"
"Yeah?"
"We're in Vegas."
Travis's head popped up, and he flipped on the lamp. Once the last 24 hours finally set in, his hand emerged from under his pillow, and he hooked his arm around me, pulling me beneath him. He nestled his hips between my thighs,
and then bent his head down to kiss me, softly, tenderly, letting his lips linger on mine until they were warm and tingly.
I can still get you eggs. Want me to call room service?
We actually have a plane to catch. His face fell. How much time do we have? Our flight is at 4. Checkout is at 11. Travis frowned and looked over at the window.
I should have booked an extra day. We should be lying in bed or by the pool.
I kissed his cheek. We have classes tomorrow. We'll save up and go somewhere later. I don't want to spend our honeymoon in Vegas anyway. His face screwed into disgust.
I definitely don't want to spend it in Illinois.
I conceded with a nod. Couldn't exactly argue that. Illinois wasn't the first place that came to mind when I thought honeymoon.
St. Thomas is beautiful. We don't even need passports.
That's good. Since I'm not fighting anymore, we'll need to save where we can.
I smiled.
You're not?
I told you, Pidge. I don't need all that when I have you.
You've changed everything. You're tomorrow.
You're the apocalypse.
My nose wrinkled.
I don't think I like that word.
He smiled and rolled onto the bed, just a few inches from my left side. Lying on his stomach, he pulled his hands under him, settling them under his chest, and he lay his cheek against the mattress, watching me for a moment, his eyes staring into mine.
You said something at the wedding. That we were like Johnny and June. I didn't quite get the reference.
He smirked.
You don't know about Johnny Cash and June Carter?
Sort of.
She fought him tooth and nail, too. They fought, and he was stupid about a lot of stuff.
They worked it out and spent the rest of their lives together.
Oh, yeah? I bet she didn't have Mick for a dad.
He'll never hurt you again, Pigeon.
You can't promise that. Just when I start settling in somewhere, he shows up.
Well, we're going to have regular jobs. Broke like every other college student. So, he won't have a reason to sniff around us for money.
We'll need every dime.
Good thing I still have a little left in savings to carry us through.
Any ideas where you'll apply for a job?
I thought about tutoring. Math.
Travis smiled.
You'll be good at that. Maybe I'll tutor science.
You're very good at that.
I can be a reference.
I don't think it'll count coming from my wife.
I blanked.
Oh my God. That just sounds crazy.
Travis laughed.
Doesn't it?
I fucking love it. I'm going to take care of you, Pidge. I can't promise that Mick will never hurt you again, but I can promise that I'll do everything I can to keep that from happening. And if it does, I'll love you through it.
I offered a small smile, and then reached up to touch his cheek.
I love you.
I love you, he said right back.
Was he a good dad? Before all that?
I don't know, I said, looking up at the ceiling. I guess I thought he was. But what does a kid know about being a good parent? I have good memories of him. He drank for as long as I can remember, and gambled. But when his luck was up, he was kind, generous. A lot of his friends were family men. They also worked for the mob. But they had kids. They were nice and didn't mind Mick bringing me around. I spent a lot of time behind the scenes, seeing things most kids don't get to see, because he took me everywhere then. I felt a smile creep up, and then a tear fell.
Yeah. I guess he was, in his own way.
I loved him. To me, he was perfect.
Travis touched his fingertip to my temple, tenderly wiping the moisture away.
Don't cry, Pidge.
I shook my head, trying to play it off.
See? He can still hurt me, even when he's not here.
I'm here, he said, taking my hand in his. He was still standing.